Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It is Friday, April 29th, 2022. Today, as we do every week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW senior writer, joins me with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
The Book Industry Study Group held its first in-person annual meeting in 3 years last Friday, Andrew. And in his keynote remarks, Hachette Book Group CEO Michael Peach characterized our era as the best of times and the worst of times. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was interesting, right? And you can read all about that BISG meeting on the PW site. My boss, Jim Milliot, was there and wrote about it. But in my effort not to bury the lead here, I'm just going to highlight something you said. Approximately 130 people attended the BISG's first in-person annual meeting in 3 years. So there's a sign right there that we're returning to some kind of normalcy, some kind of plan here to return to the workplace. Although we should point out that, you know, many more also tuned in online for the BISG meeting, which I think is a sign too of what this new normal is going to look like, that there's going to be people in person and also people coming in online. The pandemic has challenged the industry in many ways, of course, but in many ways, the book business has performed remarkably well. And this is kind of what Michael Peach talked about. We've talked about it on this show. Peach cited several positive trends, higher than expected book sales, of course, this over the course of the pandemic. And, you know, that shows an evidence of an increase of interest in reading, and higher backlist sales are a big part of this as well. That's fueled by more online sales. Consumers are now supporting many different formats, ebooks and audio, for example. Peach also touted the ability of publishers to, you know, adapt to remote work. The publishers have been able to get through this challenging time in COVID mostly remotely. And that's been, you know, that can really have an effect on how they, you know, decide to move forward in the future with their work environments. There's been an increased sale of books fueled by social media, right? The book talk effect. And publishing's commitment to produce, of course, more works of color and approach issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion. In sum, we learned that we were more adaptable than we knew, Peach said. Now, on the not-so-bright side, Peach also noted that the crises just keep coming. Labor and distribution and shipping costs are rising at rates not seen in many years. There's paper shortages. And of course, other manufacturing issues, too, are forcing many publishers to change pub dates for books they've had in the pipeline. And while publishers have successfully transitioned to remote work, you know, Peach talked about it a little, the industry is still facing the challenge of what this hybrid model is going to look like, right? Hachette's employees, for example, are returning to the office. In fact, they returned this week under, I think, a twice a week formula, like they want you in the office twice a week. And all you have to do is look at social media to see that not everyone is happy about that. But of course, that's not just in publishing too, but that's across the world. You know, if you can't do your job remotely, why spend the time and money and, you know, endure the ecological impact of commuting 5 days a week if you can do your job better from home, or at least do your job satisfactorily from home. And I think this is especially true for junior level publishing workers who don't make a lot of money to begin with and have to spend a lot of money on subway and transportation to get to their work. Peach cited other issues as well, book banning efforts, for example, which we'll talk about on this show a little bit later. And apparently big tech is coming for copyright. Peach said he's, you know, putting on his hat as AAP president. And while publishing has made strides in addressing DEI issues, issues with diversity, equity, inclusion, Peach also noted correctly that change has still been very slow to come. There was plenty more on the agenda at the meeting. BISG is a really good organization that does some serious and important work, and I can't run through it all here. But if you haven't already, do check out the report on the PW site.
You reported earlier this month, Andrew, that U.S. book sales are expected to cool somewhat in 2022 after a red-hot 2021. Publishers did find encouraging sale numbers in their Easter baskets, though. So what trends are we seeing early in this second quarter?
Yeah, so we're seeing evidence that, yeah, book sales are indeed coming back to earth. But the good news is that they aren't cratering, right? They're not hitting the earth so, you know, so hard that they're leaving a huge hole. And I've said before that you really can't keep measuring against the last 2 years, because especially last year, 2021, these were both obviously were extraordinary years with the pandemic. And, you know, I still maintain that it's going to take years to really understand the impact of the pandemic on the book business. You know, how much of this massive gain of sales that we saw, especially last year, but really over the last 2 years, how much of that are we going to hold on to as an industry as we sort of, you know, begin to barrel into this post-pandemic future? Well, the weekly sales report from the week ended April 16th suggests that the industry is, despite some very tough market circumstances, really doing okay. The Easter sales season actually got off to a very quiet start, but it finished strong. This according to NPD officials. For the week ended April 16th, 2022, NPD reports sales were down about 14 million units from 2021, which of course, again, 2021 was a blockbuster year. But here's the thing, there's still 30 million units up over 2019, which of course was the last pre-pandemic year. Overall, the book market is about 6% lower for the year over 2021. Again, 2021 was a huge year, but still the good news there is that the year-to-date numbers were 9 points off 2021 just a couple of weeks ago. So we're actually picking up some steam here as the year goes on. NPD officials in their report rightly point out that it's easy to get caught up in the market factors that are weighing on us all, right? There's inflation, there's now talk of a recession and supply chain challenges and paper shortages. But the book market is doing all right, they say. And, you know, I agree with, you know, both parts of that observation in the NPD report. You know, it's incredibly encouraging to see the 2022 numbers well ahead of 2019, the last pre-pandemic year. And despite a potentially very challenging year ahead for the global economy, both here in the U.S. and around the world, it does seem to me that the publishing industry has actually captured some organic growth that's really going to survive these current challenges. You know, look, the greatest factor, I think, impacting publishers in any year is consumer confidence and the state of the economy, right? I think that's just a fact. You know, when people have disposable income, they're going to buy more books. When they're paying more to fill up the gas tank or buy milk, they're going to buy less. Now, again, no one expected 2022 to meet 2021's torrid sales pace. But I do think that what we're seeing in the first quarter of 2022 is that the industry has really added customers. We've added readers. And whatever challenges lie ahead, that's really going to help.
This week, you wrote about a federal lawsuit in Texas in which library users in Lanao County are suing local officials over their book banning and other activities that target the library. The suit says the moves by county officials are in violation of the Constitution.
Yeah, so I think this is a pretty significant development. A group of Lanao County, Texas library supporters have filed suit against county officials in federal court, arguing that a series of book bans and other actions at the library violates their constitutional rights. Now, we have talked a lot about the book bans and other actions across the nation. And this county in Texas has really made a lot of headlines in national media. It's a small county northwest of Austin. The issues there began last fall, when community activists on the right kind of began going after the library leadership and a slew of books on library shelves. Now, the suit itself alleges that county officials have been, and I'll quote the suit here, systematically removing award-winning books from library shelves. And in addition, the library board terminated access to the library's OverDrive account, which is, of course, the leading ebook provider. That collection offered some 17,000 ebooks to county residents. And they killed that deal because county officials could not specifically go in and pick and choose the titles that were being made available to county residents through that collection. The suit also claims that county officials wrongly fired a librarian who refused to remove books that the library board wanted removed from the shelves. But here's one of the most chilling things in the suit to me. The plaintiffs claim that county officials dissolved the existing library board and then packed a newly appointed board with political appointees who were going to be supportive of the county's book banning efforts. And the suit claims that the new library board has since ordered that all new books must be presented and pre-approved by these political appointees on the new library board before they can be purchased or placed on library shelves. Terrifying. And it gets worse because the public has also been denied access to these library board meetings, the complaint states, which they say is clearly in violation of the state's open records law. The suit was brought by a group of individual plaintiffs who, according to the court filing, say they differ in their ages and professions and individual religious and political beliefs. But all of them, they say, are fiercely united in their love for reading public library books and in their belief that the government should not dictate which books they can and cannot read.
What sort of relief do these plaintiffs ask for in the suit, Andrew? And what do you think their chances are of getting any?
Yeah, so the suit asks for, well, basically they want their library back, right? The plaintiffs are seeking a declaratory relief, a judgment stating that the county officials have violated the community's First and 14th Amendment rights. And they're asking for an injunction to protect the library from these egregious actions, and they want their books back. You know, as for the case, I think it's a good one. There actually is significant case law on the books against these kinds of acts of censorship going on in the county. And it seems pretty clear that what's going on is, in fact, censorship cut and dried, right? Now, the county officials are claiming that the works that they've ordered to be removed are, in most cases, they're pornographic, right? But the suit rejects those claims. It calls that the claims of pornography an obvious pretext. None of the books, they say, that are being pulled off library shelves are pornographic. Many of them have received prestigious literary awards and national acclaim. And there's a whole list of books cited in the suit, including the book Cast, The Origins of Our Discontent by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Isabel Wilkerson. They called themselves the KKK, The Birth of an American Terrorist Group by Susan Campbell Bartoletti, and Spinning, which is an Eisner Award winner by Tilly Walden. Furthermore, the suit alleges that county officials have admitted, you know, in private, that they're banning these books because they don't like the content, because they disagree with the viewpoints, the political viewpoints, and the subject matter of these books. And there's some, you know, great stuff in the book here, right? Even books that are not nationally acclaimed should not be banned because of their content or viewpoint, the complaint says. Unfortunately, that's what's gone on in the county. That you have a small group of political appointees who are prescribing which books the public library can buy and which books Llano County residents can read based on viewpoints and ideas contained in those books. As for how this case is going to go, you never know. Once you get into court, you know, anything can happen. But I think it's very encouraging. I think the case is strong, and I think it's very encouraging to see residents pushing back in court. And the filing is just, you know, for me, it did the soul good to hear the lofty rhetoric in the suit. I think it's stuff that we all need to hear right now. For example, I'll quote the suit here. The right to publish and receive ideas, even politically unpopular ideas or ones that some find offensive or distasteful, is enshrined in our Constitution. As the Supreme Court has said, freedom of thought and speech is the matrix, the indispensable condition of nearly every other form of freedom. Just brilliant. Wonderfully put. And then there's this. Public libraries are not places of government indoctrination. They are not places where people in power can dictate what their citizens are permitted to read about and learn. Absolutely. And they also say that when the government targets public library books because they disagree with and intend to suppress the ideas contained within them, it jeopardizes the freedoms of everyone. Could not agree more. Great stuff.
The AAP this week asked federal judge Deborah Boardman to convert the preliminary injunction she issued in February blocking Maryland's library ebook law into a permanent injunction.
Yes, the end is here for the Maryland Library ebook law. As expected, right? The Association of American Publishers this week asked federal judge Deborah L. Boardman to close the door once and for all on the law by converting her February preliminary injunction blocking the law into a permanent injunction. The latest filing comes after Boardman in February had issued a preliminary injunction barring Maryland's library ebook law from being enforced, holding that the state's law is, in fact, as AAP has claimed from the outset, preempted by federal copyright law. And our listeners may recall that on April 11th, Maryland attorneys threw in the towel, right? They told the court that the state would no longer defend the law. But in a final motion, Maryland attorneys had asked the court to forego a permanent injunction, arguing that a declaratory judgment was sufficient because the law was never invoked and the state had no intention of invoking it. That, of course, as expected, was of little comfort to the AAP, which noted in its filing that, you know, intentions can change. So they wanted a permanent injunction to preclude the state from enforcing this law, period. End of story. So again, I don't think that this, you know, the Maryland library ebook law is dead. But again, I don't think the issue is going to go away. You know, I don't think it's going to go away until the major publishers and libraries can actually sit down and hammer out what is considered to be fair terms by all for ebook access. And I've said it before, but I'll say it again. This act in Maryland ran afoul of copyright law and how it was drafted, but it was never really about copyright. The issue for the libraries is about equity of access to digital content. And I'm told Maryland is already revising language for a new bill, and that new language is being talked about in other states too. And our listeners should remember too that this ruling applies only in Maryland. So there are other states that are considering library ebook laws, and there are potentially other attorney generals who may argue differently and judges who may rule differently. So we could see similar or at least other library ebook laws passed in other states. Connecticut, for example, is moving forward with theirs. And I think just this week, Rhode Island held a hearing on their book. So while the Maryland effort is done, the issue of fairness in the digital library market is one that I think is going to persist until there is some meeting of the minds between publishers and librarians. And honestly, at least the major publishers, a lot of publishers, I should say, are dealing with librarians on terms librarians consider fair. But I do hope between, you know, some of the major publishers and libraries that a meeting of the minds can happen in the marketplace, that we can get this done without judges or lawmakers needed. So stay tuned. There's probably more to come on this.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me on the program.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, in 1872, American publishers, wishing to keep booksellers and librarians informed of forthcoming titles, began a new periodical. Soon known as the Publishers Weekly, the magazine has since chronicled the arrival of hundreds of thousands of books. PW began a century and a half ago as a publication for the trade, but with the arrival of the web, the audience has grown to include readers and the general public. George Slowick, who purchased Publishers Weekly with his late partner Patrick Turner in 2010, says readers have brought much to the conversation over books and the book business.
It's really a wonderful time in terms of the feedback loop. You know, in days of yore, I was publisher in the late 80s, early 90s, working for Reed. In fact, I acquired Publishers Weekly for Reed. I was part of the team that made that acquisition. And, you know, getting one letter was a big deal. It was like, oh, my God, what have we done? Now you can be flooded rather quickly with feedback, good and bad, and it keeps you on your toes.
PW celebrates 150 years of books, coming up on the next CCC podcast. Our producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening to this Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.